Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. This is, as you've probably gathered, a day early. I was planning on having an Arscast on Friday, but given everything that's gone on in the last 24 hours or so, I feel like the conversation I've just had with Philippe Auclair ought to be released today. So that's what I'm doing. We chat about the statement about redundancies, not just about the redundancies themselves, but how that was communicated, how it was framed, and how it's come after what was such a glorious weekend and kind of knocked the stuffing out of the FA Cup win in many ways. I was planning on talking to Philippe about that great win against Chelsea and about, you know, what it might mean for the season and what it might mean for next season. We do talk about that a little bit later on. We talk about Mikel Arteta and the positives that he has had and some of the things that are exciting and have potential at this football club. But it's hard. It would be wrong to ignore the other stuff that's been going on this week as well. So that, given the fact that it is front and center, is the main crux of our conversation in this particular Arscast. So I'm not going to delay. I'm not going to do a big long intro. I'll be back after the conversation to talk to you about some other little bits and pieces at the end of the show, as always. But for now, this is me and Philippe Auclair. All right, joining me now on the Arscast, delighted to welcome back in what was supposed to be an FA Cup winning slash end of season review podcast, but it's probably going to be something a little bit different given what's happened in the last few days. It's Philippe Auclair. Hello, Philippe.
Good morning, afternoon, evening to you, Andrew, whatever time it is that people are listening to this podcast.
Exactly. Taking into account the various time zones in which many Arsenal fans across the globe live. Very inclusive of you. A wonderful way to start the conversation. It is morning here, and it is the morning after Arsenal announced 55 redundancies were to be made, including the head of recruitment, the head of UK scouting. Quite how you make roles like that redundant is a question we might come to in a little while. Can I just ask you your gut feeling on this? Because it has been a difficult season. We all know that. We're going to come to some of what happened during the season and talk about it a little bit later on. But after Saturday, after Wembley, there was a real sort of feel-good factor. People were on a high because we'd won the cup, because in the circumstances in which we'd won it, it showed a kind of strength of character and adversity and, you know, some promise and hope and encouragement from Mikel Arteta in terms of what he's getting out of the squad. And then this statement that came out yesterday, the way it was phrased and the crux of it was like a kick in the bollocks when I read it.
Yes, I think you've done a very good summing up of the situation. I was like you. I was absolutely stunned when I read the news. And I think, like everybody almost, my first reaction was, how is it possible to justify this brutal decision by intimating or insinuating or innuendoing that it was the only way that we could carry on competing on the transfer market? That's the way I felt. And in a way that it was passing on the guilt to other people, like to supporters who are not going to renew their season tickets because they can't afford them, and all the rest of it. And so I was really disgusted of Shepherd's Bush when I read that yesterday. And actually, my feeling hasn't changed. Actually, I think it has actually strengthened because I don't think there is much chance, Andrew, that we're going to see an about turn. A kind of Johnsonian turn, or what Liverpool FC did. We remember when they furloughed their staff and then they came back on that decision because of the pressure. of the supporters. I haven't met a single or talked to a single Arsenal supporter who is not quite shocked by the decision. And the response actually on social networks as well has been 100% negative. Nobody quite understands why it is impossible for the club to find the what, £2.5 million needed, maybe a bit, let's go £3 million needed to pay the salaries of these people, most of whom I would imagine do not have, won't have the salary of Francis Cachigao. So, yes, it's really put a dampener on things, giving that, strangely enough, and I don't know if it's the same for you, that win against Chelsea in an empty Wembley gave me more pleasure than any of the three cups that we won in, under Wenger, the last three cups, which were more about relief, surprise in the in Mertesacker's final, which was a lovely moment. But this one felt a little bit special. I mean, actually, not a little bit special. It really felt special. You really felt, well, we've got the springboard. What Arteta has achieved is magnificent. The way the players have... I've comported and behaved and has been superb all through the lines. Really chuffed for Emiliano Martinez. Lovely to see Maitland-Niles getting a game. And, you know, everything was like, I love everybody.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, because like with Wenger and the 2014, that was a huge relief, but it was more a case of expectation. This is what we should be doing. This is what we should have been doing for X amount of years before that. And like you, I was hugely enthused by Saturday. I felt that given the way everything had been going, to put in place this kind of a platform, this kind of a building block, really augured well for the future, and it really augured well for the work that Mikel Arteta was going to do and going to be able to do with the club. So I absolutely see exactly what you're saying there. You know, like you, I feel very unhappy to read the statement and to have it framed in a way which says these 55 people have to lose their jobs so we can invest in the team. This is a statement from your club. It's sort of this emotive language putting it out there when in reality it's corporate doublespeak. It's absolute bullshit of the worst order. And that really I found hard to take, even if you can step back and maybe look objectively at something like this and say COVID-19, no season tickets, no commercial activity, no match day revenue, no hospitality revenue. You can see on an objective level why job losses might be a case, but it's the cack-handed way with which that has been communicated 3 days after what was such a glorious inspirational almost win at Wembley, which gave people renewed hope and optimism that the direction of the club that we all support was turning around.
I'm also wondering how the players themselves are feeling about that.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up to you next, because there's an article this morning in the Athletic written by David Ornstein and James Gunnarblog about how the players are. They want a meeting with the club about this. David has tweeted this morning about how, let me just bring it up here just for 1 second while we're talking. It says, Arsenal players not happy with 55 staff being made redundant. They agreed a 12.5% wage cut in April after receiving assurances nobody would lose jobs. Yesterday's news has left the squad angry, and they plan to raise it with Arsenal bosses. And the other part of that for me, Philippe, is that, you know, we know that it took the intervention of Mikel Arteta to convince some of the squad who didn't necessarily trust the ownership that this pay cut was a necessary thing to protect jobs at the football club. So to me, it feels like not only have the players been misled, but potentially Mikel Arteta himself has been misled by those at ownership level, or certainly those at executive level. And that's got to be a huge concern about what the ramifications are when you're trying to build something at a football club, to have this schism between the playing squad and the manager and potentially those at executive level and ownership level is really not healthy.
No, you do get a feeling there's a kind of dehumanization which is happening. As in, even though the language which is used in the statement is very emotional and emoted and whichever, I mean, all the derivation you can find around the word emote, the decision is taken as if it were in a kind of a moral vacuum, because basically it doesn't take into account, obviously, the 55 people losing their jobs. It's probably a tragedy for a number of them, not necessarily for the head of scouting and people like that who had decent positions and one would have hoped had also the salary to show for it, but for, I would imagine, a number of people in the much lower echelons of the hierarchy, which is club employees, and it's an awful thing to face. But the measure that was taken, I mean, is indicative of a way of doing business, which is, you know, basically it's late-stage capitalism. That's the human element has totally gone out of it, but you use it in the communication. Yeah. And it's the, as you said, the schism, it's the contrast, the chasm between what is said and what is being done, which is so hard to take. And I mean, it's not something which is limited to Arsenal Football Club. It's unfortunately a dichotomy that is visible almost everywhere in society and everywhere where is power, where there is wealth. But to think that it is our club doing it, and in a context, you know, we're still, I suppose, naively or stupidly clinging on to the hope that football is somehow different, that somebody who owns a football club is first and foremost a custodian. This is not the case. Kroenke is not a custodian. Kroenke is somebody who owns Arsenal, which for him is a very nice way of getting, or was a nice way to get him collateral securities and so forth, and is a means to make money. And if it's to make money, let's sack people. And because people are not people, really. They're just tools to make more money. And therefore, you take the human element out of it. And because of that, you completely forget that the players, too, are human. Mm. The people, they are human beings who are affected by the fact that, you know, it might be that I don't know exactly who's been fired. But given the large number of people who are fired, I would imagine that there's quite a few of these people that the players used to say hello on their way to the training ground. People who were, you know, sweeping the floor in the dressing room, people who were serving them at the canteen, I don't know, who were mowing the grass at London Colney, and suddenly these people are no longer there. And the players are supposed to carry on because, you know, you earn a lot of money, so shut up and carry on.
Yeah.
So it's, and it is, by the way, the greatest failure of this kind of late-stage capitalistic approach. Because it people are not that stupid. They can see the difference between what is said and what is genuinely happening. And we've seen the true colors now of Sam Kroenke. For those who doubted what these colors were, well, there you are, guys. Our owners are not exactly benefactors of football or of an Arsenal Football Club or their fans.
No, I mean, there's a tweet here from Owen Mitchell, who's at Owner, and there's a picture of Kieran Tierney, who is paying tribute with the FA Cup to a guy called Tim Parham, who is the rehabilitation coordinator at Arsenal, who is losing his job, who's been apparently a victim of these redundancies. And Owen says, the guy on the left, which is Tierney, was asked to take a pay cut to protect jobs. The guy on the right still lost his job. So what does Kieran Tierney think of the guy who was so instrumental in helping him get back to full fitness after a difficult injury, and he's now sacked or made redundant, as if somehow Arsenal don't need a rehabilitation coordinator? You know, you're absolutely right. And look, there is this idea, isn't there, that look, this is the way business works. This is how it goes. You know, people get made redundant. Arsenal have to cut costs, and that's the nature of business across the world. I think we can all understand that. It's much more difficult to take.
Well, I up to a certain point.
No, okay. No,
Andrew,
I'll come back.
I'm very old-fashioned, but I do remember people when their company was in trouble putting their own money to save it. This doesn't seem to be the case. Now, fuck the company. I'll keep my money. This is what the way it's going.
Sure. No, okay. I'll roll back on that because actually I was talking to somebody here. I should say the nature of some businesses. I was talking to a man in Dublin yesterday who owns a pub, and the hospitality industry, like many, has been really badly hit here because of COVID-19, and they are bending backwards to pay the staff and keep the staff that they've had employed for 15, 20 years at this pub. And, you know, they're not owned by a billionaire. They're not owned by somebody who could pay this. You know, it's pocket change. So how do we try and readjust our minds to the idea that, you know, some people will look at this and say, well, that's just business. Revenues are down. Therefore, you've got to cut costs. People are going to have to go. You know, people sort of accept that as the way it should be, but maybe it should be a different way. Maybe if you are the owner of a business, maybe if you are a billionaire, you have a responsibility, whether it's a corporate responsibility or a moral responsibility, to the people who are your staff, to not lay them off in the middle of a worldwide pandemic when it's perfectly within your financial capability to do it. You're not stretching yourself. You're not having to remortgage. You're not having to, like, cash in your chips or anything like it. This is something that Arsenal, as a football club, they could repurpose those staff. They could keep them in their jobs for a year. And if a year down the line there's still all kinds of financial problems, well, at least they could be seen to have tried in some way to do the right thing. But this doesn't feel like that at all. And then we come, of course, to the idea of these 55 people have to lose their jobs so we can invest in the team. And this isn't a criticism of Willian, but Willian is going to get a gigantic signing on fee, which is many times the size of the money that it would take to pay those staff for 12 months.
Yep, I quite agreed. But I wouldn't put the blame at the feet of Willian.
No, I'm not blaming. I'm talking about the construct.
But I think people are going to do that, which is a typically populist move. It's like a bit what we're seeing in England at the moment, when seemingly a majority of people are blaming their compatriots for the fact that the country is a complete mess in terms of COVID-19. Is that they're blaming not the government. They're not blaming the people who have the power. They're blaming the people who are the victims of the power, and that which is a populist trick. It's the oldest trick in the book for populists. And the same way that you can point the finger at a player saying, "Ooh, look at him, greedy bugger," and in the same time, I was just reading a piece which had been published in the Institute for Policy Studies in April, which showed that Stan Kroenke's own fortune had gone up by £323 million, the equivalent of, since the start of 2020. He's somebody who's done very well out of the pandemic. So it is even more obscene. And I couldn't agree more. I don't think it's maybe there's a responsibility. Of course there is a responsibility, if you're a business owner, to look after the people who work for you. And that's, to me, it just shows how late, and I'm sorry this is turning into a political podcast, listeners, but, or actually I'm not sorry, because these are the questions we should be asking ourselves. You know, I was naive in thinking that perhaps this pandemic would actually speak to the nicer, kinder, gentler, more generous side of people. It's the opposite. It's speaking to the absolutely most, most rubbish part of ourselves, when people have got things to protect. And in the case of Stan Kroenke, it's billions of dollars, billions and billions and billions of dollars. Mm. And he's added to that, just like Jeff fucking Bezos has now the fortune, which he probably could solve all the planet's, you know, problems within 5 days, but he won't do it.
Yeah.
And if he can double his stupid, ugly, obscene fortune, he will do it. And some people will say, well, that's business. It's not business. It's totally immoral. It's an insult to everything, to us. And in fact, yes, I mean, when Arsenal Football Club, and yes, of course, Arsenal Football Club will have some financial challenges, but which the club is perfectly capable of facing, certainly more. I mean, I've got a mate who has a restaurant in Peterborough. There's a Polish guy, Damien. Mm. Very, very good restaurant. He's worked his ass off during this pandemic to keep his staff on. He's done things that, honestly, I'm, you know, my admiration for him has no bounds. He was working 14 hours a day baking bread and imagining how he could deliver that to people. Why was he doing that? It was not to save his business, or rather it was to save his business in as much as he wanted to save the people who were working for him and had been working for him for a while. Mm. So just like a pub owner Krunker is the very opposite of that. And it makes you feel sick. It doesn't make you feel sick of being an Arsenal fan. It actually reminds you of why you're an Arsenal fan and why this guy is not an Arsenal man. It's got nothing to do with Arsenal, really.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, I think the reaction, of course, there have been some dissenting voices, and I struggle very much with the idea that people might side with a billionaire over 55 people.
Listen,
just
they,
like
they,
them.
They side with torturers, so don't be surprised.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. But, it feels like, to me, you know, I only want Arsenal to be the very best that it can be, and I'm sure that's the same for you and for most of our listeners. I find it difficult and upsetting when things damage the reputation of the club, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever about what happens on the pitch, that's sport. We can all compartmentalize that. You can be good for a while and you can be not so good for a while, and you can win things and you can not win things. And what people think and what other fans think isn't really, you know, the be all and end all, to be honest. But, you know, if there's honest endeavor involved in it, you can kind of get behind it. But Arsenal, the institution, and I feel for, you know, the people, a lot of the people who work there who really are invested in what's good about Arsenal and what's best for Arsenal and the good things that Arsenal does as a football club, as an institution, the Arsenal Foundation, the work it does in the community, the importance that it has, not just in North London, but everywhere. And I feel like stuff that what happened yesterday really has a negative impact on the perception of what I think at the heart of it is still something that is fundamentally a good thing, if that makes sense.
Completely. I mean, basically, I'm not going to add anything to that, because I think what you said is exactly what I think. And right. I think most of us are thinking at the moment. And you're thinking of, the work done by Arsenal in the community, and heaven knows that some of the officers in there have been absolute, you know, heroes in what they've been doing, or even what a number of the club employees, what the club has done during the pandemic has been perfectly commendable. This is different. This is the moment when we're faced with a very stark reality of what it is to be a business in 2020. I'm not, and also it shows that say that we fans, season ticket holders, whoever, have in the way the club is run is non-existent.
Mm.
Absolutely none. I mean, so it also enhances your feeling of powerlessness, which you didn't always have, you know, in the past. It's not that so long ago that you felt that as an Arsenal supporter and shareholder or past shareholder,
yeah,
you did have a voice, even if people kind of ignored it most of the time. at least you had, a way to express it, and perhaps the club was a little bit more careful in the way it behaved. These days are over, and what the consequences will be on the performances of the team and the way the club goes forward, I don't know, because I would imagine that some players who were perhaps on the verge of signing a new contract, I think you can guess which player I'm thinking of in particular, or extending one, might be looking at this, not too sure about this, really.
Yeah.
And not too sure, you know, especially coming, as you say, coming after such a high, and especially because as well, the virtues of Arteta's team are completely at the opposite end of the spectrum from the kind of principles or lack of principles that we're seeing at work here. Because Arteta's team is very much, it's a collective effort with some brilliant players in there, but you do get a feeling that everybody's in there for the right reasons. You do get the feeling that everybody's working for everybody, that there is a wonderful togetherness, which we haven't had at the club for a very long time. And suddenly this togetherness is being, well, imperiled, I would imagine, by the decision, the crass decision of an owner, and the way, as you say, in which it's been presented to the public, and absolutely no preparation. There haven't been any indications, by the way, that this was coming. I mean, the fact is that, Arsenal is in a peculiar situation in terms of its revenue, because perhaps more than any other club in the Premier League, especially since we have failed to qualify for the Champions League, we do rely on match day revenue to a great extent to for the income of the club. And obviously, this has taken a huge hit, and the hospitality, everything that goes with it. So I would imagine the figures are not going to be very pretty, to say the least. On the other hand, there is nothing, again, that prevents the owner from putting some money in, especially since the financial fair play regulations, as you know, have been relaxed by UEFA.
Well, they're bendable anyway. You can do what you want as long as people don't find the emails for a few years.
Or hire half a dozen of the most expensive lawyers in town, and manage to get two of the three to nominate two of the three judges which are going to pass sentence or not, as it were, on your case.
Sounds,
how wonderful
sounds
is that?
Like a wonderful scenario for people that might be able to make that happen. I mean, how do we, Philippe, We can talk about KSC and we can talk about Stan and Josh and look at them as, you know, these corporate owners, corporate entities. But how much responsibility do those at the top of the club have to take for the way that this has been implemented, the way that this has been communicated in particular? You know, Arsenal don't have a CEO, which seems to me like a strange way to run a business of this size. It feels to me like a strong chief executive would be crucial, particularly at a time like this. Arsenal have this job share situation where Raul Sanyehi is responsible for the football and Vinay is responsible for the business side of the club. Quite to whom they report is unclear. I suppose it just goes straight to Stan and Josh. But it feels like at executive level there's a piece missing, an important piece missing from what should be considered the right kind of structure to run any organization of this size. But, you know, do they not have to? I mean, the statement that was released yesterday was co-signed by them. I am taking it for granted that this was an edict from on high, from Denver or Delaware or Los Angeles or wherever it was that Stan was laying his head and gave the order out. But at the end of the day, they're responsible for how that's communicated. So do we not have to look internally as well?
Yes, but this reminds me of a conversation we had almost like a year ago, when we were trying to understand the structure of the club, and we did not quite understand how it was working. We found it very difficult to see, oh, this person is doing this, this person is doing that, but there is nobody who is really in charge of the whole operation. And by the way, there's a question, and I know COVID has played with our brains and we've forgotten everything. We don't know which year it is any longer, which season has just finished, where we don't know these things any longer. But correct me if I'm wrong, Arsenal do not have a chairman any longer. No. Sir Chips Keswick resigned in May 2020, correct?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of the fact that anybody's taken his place.
I mean, they would say that in, you know, the role that he had was ceremonial. It wasn't really, you know, there was no authority or no power with that. Therefore,
am I right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there has not been.
We're a club without a chairman. I mean, even if the chairman is the equivalent of the president of the Italian Republic and is like a tutelar figure.
Yeah.
Sir Chips Keswick, whatever his faults and his qualities may be, was an Arsenal man and is an Arsenal man. Mm. Just like, by the way, and that's, you know, talk about contrast, Ken Fryer. All this beautiful celebration of Ken Fryer's 70 years at the club.
Yeah.
You know, with the FA Cup final and everything. I mean, I wonder what Ken is thinking of that. He's an Arsenal man.
Yeah.
He's a genuine Arsenal man. And also these people have been, you know, oh, here it is, have your nice celebration. And that's it. And now, you know, bugger off. But it's, I find it quite strange that we do not have somebody who actually represents the club, even if it's, as I said, in a kind of honorific position. And we don't have a chairman and we don't have a CEO. That's a very, very, very strange way of doing being a football club. There mustn't be that many around which have got these two characteristics.
Mm. Yeah, look, I think... I think there's something fundamentally wrong with the way that the club is set up at this moment in time. I think it has left us open to an element of opportunism or to opportunists, I might say. So what do you make of the decision to make redundant the head of recruitment or the head of international scouting, Francis Kadjigao? I mean, if it was presented as a sacking, you might say, well, he is going to be replaced because, and he may well be replaced. And maybe people can make an argument that, you know, scouting over the years is an area in which Arsenal needed to make improvements. But a week after the transfer window opens, to make redundant your head of international scouting, your head of UK scouting, on top of a swathe of other cuts which have come to the scouting department, you know, it raises questions about how the recruitment process at Arsenal is being operated.
I think it's being operated by corruption, or am I wrong?
I wouldn't disagree with that, or certainly I would say that he has a heavy amount of influence at the football club. When you look at the targets that we've been linked with, when you look at some of the players that have come in, when you look at some of the deals that he has been involved in, it seems, you know, when you look at the fact that he is watching games from the director's box with Edu, who is his long-term associate. I don't know that they're he's necessarily his client, but they have a long-time working relationship, which goes back to the Brazil Corinthians side back in the mid-2000s. And Raul Sanyehi, of course, who is a, you know, who is a good friend of his as well.
Yes, and the thing is, I mean, you could say, you know, going back to Kadjigao, they could say that it's in a way the last link, real link with the Wenger era, which is going, because of course Kadjigao was instrumental in bringing players like Cesc Fabregas or Loren or Santi Cazorla to the club, and many others. And he was a very, I mean, he was the reason why our Spanish connection was so strong, because though he is he's British, he actually worked in Spain for a very long time and played actually in Spain for quite a long time. So you could say that it's the end of the Wenger era, and in a way that Kadjigao's presence was quite a bit anachronistic. But this being said, he's still only 50, he's still as well connected as he's ever been. And again, there's been no announcement of any nomination, which I find bizarre. I find bizarre when somebody, because he's been incredibly important in the way the club has been run, and he was actually involved in, I think, in the recruitment of Saliba and Martinelli. He would have been anyway.
Yeah, he's certainly heavily involved with Martinelli. It was one of his connections in Brazil.
A find Gabriel Martinelli has been. And so you think, well, he knows his job quite clearly. And I think Saliba is a player that you'll enjoy seeing him in action. I'm a bit baffled. I can't imagine that his salary was so huge that it would be justified to find somebody who was perhaps a little bit less, you know, well remunerated. And maybe they have somebody in mind. But again, the way it's going, when I said corruption, I mean, it's because I don't understand the way the club is run, to be honest. I don't find the relationship healthy at all. I don't think that an agent, and especially an agent like Kirsch Orapchan, who is somebody has got a lot of personal charm and all these sort of things, and loads of connections with some very, very big hitters in the world of football. I can't see how it is going to be for the benefit of the club.
Mm.
He's a very different animal, for example, from Jorge Mendes. Like Mendes, you know exactly what you get when you get Mendes, which means he's going to make a lot of money, that's for sure. But he's somebody who delivers projects. It's like what he did at Wolves, what he did at Monaco beforehand, what he did with many Portuguese clubs as well, that he has a very clear idea. He's strategically speaking, he knows where he wants the club to go. And he's actually a very successful agent if you're willing to pay him. And if you're okay with perhaps the ethical dimension of some of his dealings, you know, which is also another problem. But you see what he did at Monaco, for example, where he was basically in charge of recruitment. They became French champions and reached the semi-finals of the European of the Champions League after beating Manchester City. And it was with a team that had been in second division like 2 years beforehand. you see what he's done with Wolves, and you might not like the way the club is structured. You might not like his relationship with the Chinese owners. Again, you might have plenty of reservations, but you can say that as a sports project, if you manage to set it aside from the rest, it is a remarkable success. I don't think Jurapian is that type of agent or super agent. He's somebody who does deals.
Mm.
He's not a club builder. He's a deal maker.
Yeah, I mean, look, you could ask fans of Queen's Park Rangers or Reading or Corinthians how Jurapchin's influence has had an impact on their football clubs. And I will leave it for people to use Dr. Google to find that out if they're not aware of how that's gone. So that's what, you know, I like you, I would share concerns about that. But I think I also have concerns about the way that recruitment at Arsenal has become less focused on things that we, not too long ago, were saying were really important, were the modern way to find players. Like, there's no one way to do it. You can have a great scout who can identify talent, but you can also use the data and information that is now prevalent in football that wasn't there years ago, but is now available. And Arsenal, mm-hmm. of course, bought a company called StatDNA, and I've, you know, had my jokes about StatDNA. But it seems to me like there's a move away from using modern methods of player identification and recruitment. So Jason Rosenfeld, who was the head of StatDNA, left Arsenal. Sven Mislintat, who is somebody who has a very different way of player recruitment to Raul Sanjahi, who prefers, as we know, this contacts-led approach, left Arsenal. We now have Francis Cajigau leaving. It feels like we're going to be fishing out of a very small pool, using only the kind of bait that will attract a certain amount of the football talent that is in the world. And at a time when Arsenal clearly have financial issues, it seems like being as smart as we can possibly be in the market is crucial. Instead, we're restricting ourselves to deals which may not be the best way of using the limited resources that we have. And you know, there's sort of this veneer of understandability, if you like, to some of the deals. Like Willian, for example, not necessarily a deal I would do, but you could make a very good case that Willian, even at 32, he'll be 32 on Sunday, could make an impact in this mm-hmm. Arsenal team, given the lack of creativity and given the lack of goals and what have you. There's a very good case to be made for that. But is there a case to be made that perhaps the money that you invest in Willian in the long term might be better off being invested in younger talent who can grow and who can achieve their potential? This short-term approach to doing deals, to squad building, hasn't worked. We finished this season in eighth. We finished eighth and scraped into eighth in the Premier League based on a recruitment policy which saw us bring older, experienced players to get back into the Champions League as soon as possible. It hasn't worked. So why are we still doing it?
Yes, and the other thing which surprises me is that if Stan and Josh Kroenke are so keen on making sure that they don't lose any money, actually they carry on making money, why are they sanctioning this approach, which is in fact the very opposite to what they should be doing, which is thrifty? And as you said, you know, when, like, for example, Gabriel Martinelli's is a perfect example of what we should be doing.
Yeah.
I would say Kieran Tierney is a very good example. He wasn't that expensive. He's a super player, as we know. And then also we have a decent academy, as you know, which has produced quite a few players, actually, which Arteta has used and well used. And used well, of course, you know, it's not just Saka, it's also Eddie, it's also Nelson. There's plenty of it. There's Willock, there's Smith Rowe. There's loads of players there whom we can build something with. And you think suddenly, well, okay, so we give another contract to David Luiz. We give a contract to Willian. What on earth is going on here? You know, players who are basically doing their last gig. Players who normally, this kind of deals, And no offense meant here, but they would be going to Turkey, to, you know, a league of that kind, or perhaps to an Italian club.
or to some of the Middle East clubs.
We would love to have players of that type. I mean, both of them very fine players, but coming to the end of their careers, it's pretty obvious. The guys do not have a sell-on value, which is also a bit of a problem. And you compare this recruitment policy with the recruitment policy of other clubs, which are supposedly Arsenal's rivals, and you think, well, how can Arsenal be right when everybody seems to be doing, and people who are doing better than we are in terms of results, have a completely different policy. If you look at what Chelsea, whom we've beautifully beaten, how sweet was that? But you look at who they are looking for on the transfer market, they brought Ziyech, they're getting Timo Werner, they're after Kai Havertz. You know, you look at it and think, wow, these are players, serious players. We've got a sell-on value as well.
Yeah.
They're not cheap, but they've got a sell-on value. And it's a buyer's market at the moment. So, and you think, well, surely there is better business to be done than that. And it's also a form of risk aversion, which is extraordinary for a capitalist. Normally, one of the qualities you might associate with capitalism is an appetite for risk and the willingness to take risks to reach, you know, the conclusion that you hope for, and which means investing at times. And at the moment, it's a really good moment to invest, actually, as anybody will tell you.
Yeah.
If you have some cash in the bank, which Arsenal has got, by the way, you can actually make your presence felt. And you're not going to make your presence felt by offering an unhoped-for contract to an aging player who is very good. I really like Willian. I've always liked him very much. But when I read the figures that were submitted in the press, I'm thinking, what? This can't be true. This can't be real. This is crazy. But apparently it is.
Well, yeah. Look, I mean, I just find it mind-boggling that in this modern football era, we seem to be going back to a way of recruiting players, which is, I think you used the word anachronistic before, and that's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like something which is part of a strategy to rebuild a club, which, let's face it, despite the FA Cup win, and I loved it as much as you did, and everybody here who's listening to this, I loved it. I thought it was amazing, and I felt very emotional and happy on Saturday because of what we did and how we did it. And I felt happy for everybody related to Arsenal fans and everything, because we've all been through so much this season. But it was a terrible season. It has been a period of decline under Arsene Wenger, but also since Arsene Wenger. And the people who have been tasked with rebuilding the club, tasked with improving performance and making decisions for the benefit of the football club, at the very best, you could say they've got them wrong.
Yeah.
There's another more cynical question you might ask, but I guess we probably shouldn't. You know, we shouldn't, but I think people can understand what I'm talking about. So, I mean, on the season as a whole, what can we learn from it, Philippe? Or what are we capable of learning from it? If not from an organizational point of view, because it feels like perhaps, and we know the transfer window is open and will play out and we can see what we do, and maybe in 6 weeks' time we'll feel different about things. But as fans, as supporters...
It's open for a very long time, by the way.
Till October.
I can't remember the exact date at which it closes,
October 6th. October 6th and then October 17th for transfers between the Premier League and English EFL clubs. So there you go. So, you know, there's a long period in which many things could happen. So I accept that, you know, 6 weeks down the line, we might feel very differently about things. But I just wonder, you know, as supporters, what have we learned about what Arsenal have done and how Arsenal have performed this season?
I mean, I tend to be a half glass half full type of person. So, and honestly, there have been two seasons in any case. Maybe there have been three seasons. there's been the Emery months, the Arteta before pandemic, and the post lockdown Arteta. It's almost like you're talking about three different teams here. And the first, the way in which it disintegrated, I still can't quite understand what happened. I think there was an international break. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Because at the beginning of the season, we thought, come on, you know, let's, you know, we've signed Nicolas Pepe. That's great. And we'd played a European final, and we thought, maybe, you know, we'll be contenders for the top four. And then it fell apart at an extraordinarily quickly, when you think about it. And in ways that I cannot quite understand, because I think everything turned against Unai Emery, including himself, in the matter of a couple of weeks. So you could say this was a disaster. And this was a point, remember, we were talking about the real risk of relegation at the time.
Yeah.
And these were not idle words, because this can happen to a side that is disintegrating. So if we're talking about the three seasons, this one was a nightmare. The second one was a moment of consolidation. And perhaps we'll come to see it as an absolutely crucial period in Arsenal's history in a few years' time. Mm. If we manage to leave aside all the things we've been talking about for a long time already today. But the moment when Arteta actually showed that, he had the guts and he had the honesty and the strength of character needed to take a team that was really going absolutely nowhere. And it was the stabilization of the patient. And now we're in the, I would say, post-convalescence phase. Or rather, we're still convalescing, but we're allowed out.
But we've just fallen down a manhole.
Yeah. But let's try and forget about that for a second, if we can.
Yeah, okay.
Because lots of positive things have happened during the year, considering where we were, you know, in November. Certainly the emergence of some very, very fine players. I mean, Saka is just like, it's just wonderful to see a young player, you know, blossom as he's done and showing so much talent, so much intelligence, so much flexibility. And a few others. I mean, I've been impressed with Nelson of late, and I didn't quite thought he had it in him, but he's impressed me in a way that I wasn't expecting him to impress me, and I guess impress others. There are many other reasons to rejoice. We had to deal with an appalling list of injuries once again, and managed to do so, especially at the back for a change. We saw the renaissance and the resurgence of Shkodran Mustafi, who went from yesterday's garbage can contents to Bionic Man within a few weeks. It's extraordinary, the transformation of that player. So if you look, and I'm sure you could add your own suggestions here, the fact that Aubameyang was magnificent again, and that we must keep him. You could carry on. The Xhaka being rediscovered as a player, thanks to Arteta. Dani Ceballos, a player I absolutely love, and whom I hope as well. It looks good, actually, that we should be able to keep. And you think, well, the elements are there for a team that is actually, you know what, this word, exciting. It's actually an exciting team to think of. The potential is there.
Yes.
It's not perfect. We're, you know, still a bit lightweight in defense, I think, certainly in central defense. I don't think we've still, you know, found an equilibrium there. There's going to be the question of who of Leno or Martinez. That's going to be an interesting one, by the way.
It's going to be a scrap, isn't it? I think
yeah.
From what I hear, neither of them are going anywhere next season, which is a good thing. And it's going to be a scrap. And I think that's a positive thing.
We're going to have the best number two in the league.
yeah. Whichever way it works out.
Yeah, so we could carry on like that. So if you look at it, I don't think you can look at the season as a whole, as there really were three phases which were so distinct one from the other that we have to look at it that way. The first phase was absolutely awful. The second was comforting because it showed we still had fight in it. And the third was and is exciting and nowhere near the perfect, you know, mix yet. I mean, what happened against Villa, what happened against Brighton, you know, that these are proofs that there are still a lot of, areas in which this team can improve, but it has the potential to improve. You don't have the feeling that you're part of a decline any longer. That's the main thing. You don't think, well, you didn't before the stupid things which have happened, but you really felt, actually, no, we've reached the bottom of the barrel and now we're starting to make our way up. And we've got the right guy in charge. And because that's the biggest plus is Mikel Arteta. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
I was going to say to you that, like, can I put it to you that the reason I certainly, feel positive about what we could do is Mikel Arteta. Have you been surprised by him? Have you been, impressed by him with the way that he has had to deal with? I mean, I don't think any manager in history, any football manager ever, has had to contend with so many things in the early stages of their career. When you think about the mess he inherited, and not for the first time, you know, when he arrived as a player, he walked into a mess as well. But you know, the mess, the post-Emery thing, the Xhaka situation, the Mustafi situation, the sense that fans and the club had become disconnected during the end of that Emery era, not helped again by some poor communication where, you know, fans were dismissed as noise. You know, he had an imbalanced squad. He had some players brought in January who, you know, at least one of them didn't make a lot of sense. One of them did. Then there was the lockdown. He gets COVID-19. There are just so many things for a manager to deal with, and to come out on top after 6 months, 7 months of real time, if you like, but only 4 or 5 months within the job itself with a trophy, has been hugely impressive. And where I feel encouraged and optimistic about Arsenal and where it might go lies almost entirely with Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, and in fairness, we couldn't guess what he would be like and how he would succeed, because he had absolutely zero experience of management. He had obviously been a very fine assistant manager to, you know, the most successful team in the country, and with, you know, quite a mentor. We knew he was also somebody who mentally had to speak like Arsene Wenger had a lot of mental strength, and because it's something he'd shown all through his career. There was this remarkable, I saw this exchange that you had on Twitter with this chap who reminded you that who told you that he'd been the guy who scored the penalty kick when he was 21 years old. He took the ball from experienced players in front of Ronald de Boer when he was at Rangers to shoot the penalty kick, which gave Rangers the title on goal difference.
Yeah.
By 1 point, one of the two. You think, wow, at 20 years of age, 21 years of age, that's the kind of character he's demonstrated. But also, perhaps what surprised me is that I think many of us were a little bit worried that we would get a kind of Pep Mark II or Pep Light. And that's not at all what we've got.
Mm.
Not at all. Obviously, he's a very pragmatic coach. That's one which is wonderful quality. I absolutely love that. Not somebody, he's got principles such as, you know, he wants to play from the back, and he's actually managed to teach our team to play from the back in a rather satisfying way. I thought actually the FA Cup final.
Yeah, it was
some
great.
Of the play from the back was exceptionally good.
Yeah.
And so he's capable of doing that, but he doesn't have, to me, he doesn't seem to have an ideology as such. He seems to be somebody who's got principles and then is pragmatic enough to know how to bend these principles to what he's got at his disposal and who is confronting him. He's very good as well as somebody to prepare his teams tactically against the big guns, which he did against Liverpool and Manchester City, which is something we hadn't been able, and Chelsea, something which we hadn't been able to do in the past. So you put all that together, you think, my goodness, we've got a serious contender here. And let's hope we keep him. And let's hope that he is really the guy who takes the decisions. I don't know if Mikel Arteta wanted Willian. I don't know about that.
I mean, I think I think there are some stories that he does or he did, or certainly if somebody said to him, do you want Willie Ann? He said yes, and could see that there's a benefit in that, you know, yep. to his team. So from that point of view, you know, whatever concerns I have or you have or other people might have, if Arteta wants him, I think he's earned the trust of fans yep. thus far. You know, for the rest of us, when we're looking at it from a wider context, perhaps Mikel Arteta is looking at it, well, what can this guy bring to my team? Can they get him for me? I can find a use for this guy for two seasons, whatever it might be. After that, that's not really my concern. That's the job of the executive. So maybe that's the prism through which he's looking at it. You know, I do feel like as a man, as a communicator, as somebody who talks about wanting the best for the club and to get the club back to where it wants to be, I feel like there's an openness and there's an honesty from him when he talks about yes. those things, which I have to say I find reassuring, particularly at the moment when I think about some of the stuff that's going on and some of the stuff about the club that I find hard to take or a bit more unpalatable. To have somebody like him there provides that balance, if you like, so I don't go completely screaming off the cliff edge.
No, and you look at it, because when you look at the club hierarchy, there are quite a few people there which are very happy to see in place. I mean, I'm really happy that Freddie is still with us.
Yeah.
Know? I'm happy that Per Mertesacker is with us.
Yeah.
There are lots of people that you think, yeah, it's good. Yeah, there's a nucleus there of some. Obviously, the academy must be working all right, given the number of players who are coming through.
Yeah.
Must be doing something right here. So obviously, we are scouting and detecting this. To keep them away from our, you know, competitors.
Mm-hmm.
So you think actually, you know, there's a nucleus there, and there is, which is why it is also frustrating, because you think there's a nucleus there for a club that is genuinely going forward, and these are not empty words. But then there are the structural problems, and you wonder at one point, you know, there's going to be yet again another meeting of two forces which don't necessarily want to go in the same direction.
Or at least want to nominally go to the same destination, but in different ways.
Exactly, yes. Mm. Because obviously success remains the objective of everybody, one would like to think.
Well, one can only hope. One can only hope. And, you know, we'll wait and see how it all plays out. There's a lot of work to do, obviously, and Arteta himself has been quite blunt and forthright about what the club need to do, you know, to improve and to, you know, put us back on track and to put us back where he feels we belong, and in many ways where Arsenal fans feel we belong. We'll have a better idea of how that's going a little later in the transfer window, so we might catch up with you then. But as ever, Philippe, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I hope the listeners have too.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Thank you, as always, to Philippe Auclair. You can follow him on Twitter if you're not already, at Philippe Auclair. That is at Philippe Auclair. So, fairly heavy going today, although we did end it in a positive way, talking about Mikel Arteta, the impact he's had, the influence he's had, and hopefully where he can take us in the future, assuming he is given the tools and the resources to make that happen. Fingers crossed on all counts. this is the first Arsecast of the end of the season, I guess. We are going to keep it going through the off-season, the transfer period, whatever you want to call it. You can't really say the summer because summer is nearly over. But the schedule, the Arsecast schedule, will remain the same. Arsecast Extra on Monday with James and Arsecast Regular on Friday. No doubt we'll do some extra podcasts in between as well. And if you're a Patreon member, you definitely get some extra podcasts, including the very first transfer podcast we did yesterday before all the stuff went down, you might say. Myself and James Benge from Football London had a good chat about transfers. So if you're a Patreon member, you can find that on your feed right now. If you're not, patreon.com/arseblog, and you can sign up for a fiver a month if you want. If you don't want to, it's fine as well, but we really do appreciate all the support we've got from our members. We will be doing extra bits and pieces for you over the course of this next few weeks until the new season begins again. To all of you for listening throughout the season as well, thank you very much indeed. I know I said this on Monday on the Arsecast Extra, but I really do mean it. It's great to have you along. Hopefully there'll be some good stories, some ups and downs, of course, between now and things kicking off again. But whatever it is, we'll talk about it, we'll chat about it, and hopefully try and make some sense about it too. Until the next one, folks, we'll catch you then. Take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Driving is not about the destination. It's about the journey, the experience, the sensation. Open your mind to something new, but also secondhand with lots of miles on the clock. It won't last as long as you'd like, but it's still really expensive. Drive the all-new Kia. What, him? Now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.